Yeah, she'll give the other one.
Okay.
She'll give the breakaway. She.
Right.
Good morning.
What?
Good morning, everyone. I am so excited to see all of your friendly faces here. I wasn't sure anyone was going to come, so it's good to see everyone. So I wanted to talk about this topic for a long time, this question of the connection between Chinese food and Jews and December 25th. You'll notice that I try my best not to say the word Christmas. The reason why... Yeah, that word. The reason why is because as far as things go, people get very anxious sometimes about saying the word, you know, the name Jesus. No problem really saying the name Jesus, but saying the word Christmas, or I'll say it for the purposes here, Christ, is not so wonderful because Christ means...
Anointed one.
So it's not so great to say in general. Again, I try to avoid saying it if possible. And so you'll hear me say December 25th for the rest of the class, unless I'm reading something, and then I'll say it. As a disclaimer. So what I wanted to do is talk about the connection between these three things, the Jewish people, Chinese food, and the holiday on December 25th, and try to understand if there is a connection. Before we do that, though, it's really kind of important to understand how we ended up where we are today. People often, certainly young people, think that we are where we are today because this is how things have always been, and this has just sort of been the status quo forever. But it's not like that. And I was just telling someone before that I saw earlier this morning, someone had a Facebook post where they said that as per tradition, they were having Chinese food today. But they said that they were pretty sure this had a source in the Talmud to eat Chinese food on December 25th. So full disclosure, it does not have any sources in the Talmud to have Chinese food today. And so the question is, where does all this come from exactly? And sort of as another example to give, if I were to ask you what the colors of Hanukkah are, what are the colors of Hanukkah?
Blue and white.
Blue and white, I think mostly. So where does that come from?
Israel.
The Israeli flag? Okay. Any other thoughts?
It has to predate the Israeli flag.
I'm not sure it has to predate the Israeli flag.
Doesn't it come from some fish?
So these are all really lovely suggestions. So the person who decided that blue and white were the colors of Hanukkah was the Hallmark Company, because they were trying to make a contrast from December 25th and trying to say that, okay, if green and red are the colors of December 25th, then what are the colors for the other holiday, the Jewish holiday? So they were the ones who came up with blue and white, and we understand why blue and white. Okay, Israel, they came up with it in the 50s, so it probably was connected to the state of Israel or something like that. But ultimately, we realized that much of what we know as Hanukkah nowadays and what we know of December 25th nowadays really is based on corporations making decisions and the commercial industry making decisions, and very infrequently is it because of the actual traditions that we have. And of course, that's not to say that the mitzvot that we have on Hanukkah are made up from that perspective, but in terms of how things are known globally, usually it comes from the corporations who make these decisions.
Rabbi, we saw Dreaming of a Jewish Christmas last night.
Okay.
It's a lot about the Jewish songwriters who wrote Christmas songs.
Okay, good. All right, so...
The underlying argument there was that those songs tended to secularize December 25th.
Okay, fantastic. So we'll bring that point up later on. Does anyone know how many songs for December 25th were written by Jews?
Almost all of them?
Yes, at least a dozen.
So at least a dozen, but I saw this post, and I have a source we'll quote later on. 11 of the most famous songs for December 25th were all written by Jews. And it's clearly because there's a desire from the Jewish people to have something to do on December 25th and to find meaning in this day, which of course leads us ultimately to recognize that that's what the Chinese food in its deepest roots is all about. We want to do something or have something to do on this day, and so that's why it became so critical. It's interesting, though, why Christmas did gain the popularity that it has nowadays. And if you take a look at source number one, you'll see this very reliable source from Wikipedia that says that Christmas is the only religious holiday that is a federal holiday. And this is true. We've fact-checked it with Google, so this has to be correct. And so some businesses allow employees of non-Christian religions to take paid time off for their religious observances. And other holidays, such as Halloween and Valentine's Day, are widely celebrated in the U.S., but rarely include paid time off, which indicates for us that, of course, this holiday is going to gain much more traction because everyone is off on this day. And we know you want to go shopping today. There are very few options for a person to go because of the fact that most stores are closed because it's a real federal holiday. And it's interesting to note the history of how Jews were interacting with the day. If you take a look at source number two, it's an amazing reality of something that took place in St. Louis, actually. A controversy arose in 1883 surrounding a Friday night lecture in St. Louis. Reform Rabbi Dr. Solomon Sonnenschein of Temple Shaarei Emeth proposed that it might be appropriate for Jews to celebrate Christmas. "Can the American Jew keep Christmas?" he asked. He answered summarily, "I say he can without in the least disgracing his religious convictions or interfering with the building up of a stronger and nobler Judaism." He reasoned that Christmas was celebrated as a national holiday because its stronger secular orientation did not conflict with Jewish beliefs. More shocking was his claim that Jews should celebrate Hanukkah on December 25th, regardless of when Hanukkah fell on the calendar. The suggestion had a certain allure because of the Hebrew calendar. Hanukkah falls on the 25th of the Jewish month of Kislev, as is Christmas on the 25th of December. In Sonnenschein's opinion, Jews could better appreciate both Christmas and Hanukkah if they shared a mutual date on the calendar. Right. So going back already to the 1800s, Jewish people in America we're trying to find some sort of a connection between our people and this federal holiday of Christmas. And so there were some, certainly not in the Orthodox world, because there wasn't much of an Orthodox community, but in the Reform community, they were really trying to make a push to have a strong association with the holiday of Christmas. This is in strong distinction with other groups of Jews. If you take a look in source number three.
Okay.
Yes.
Doesn't that kind of sound exactly like how the Puritans claim that the pagan views were incorporated into Christianity by moving the dates of their holidays to coincide, like a fast track for assimilation?
That sounds like a fair comparison to me.
Okay.
Yeah, absolutely. So if you take a look at source number three, there is this interview with this individual named Figgy Heimfeld. So you take a look inside. "My husband," she says, "was stoned because they blamed him for killing their God, Jesus. And on Christmas night, he didn't dare to go out because the Gentiles used to go caroling from house to house and beating up the Jews who were outside. So he stayed in our home, and my mother always prepared sour cabbage soup with potatoes and toast with garlic. Why this kind of food? Well, it smelled right. I don't know what it symbolized, but Christmas Day was a regular day. We were very sad because we saw them caroling and we saw them to be happy, and we were very unhappy. We were always beaten up as children. They told us to go to Palestine. We couldn't go there. This happened when I was a child in between the years 1930 to 1939. Right? So you had this one group of Jews who were Americanized, trying to assimilate into American culture, finding real deep connections between Judaism and the holiday of Christmas. And then you had these European Jews who had very little connection and wanted to separate themselves as much as possible from this holiday because of all the negative associations that they clearly had with the day. And so much so that if you take a look at source number four, you'll see that there have been numerous Yiddishisms or Yiddish names for the holiday of Christmas throughout Jewish history. And in particular, most of the names actually have some sort of a negative association with them. Take a look at source number four. Yiddish folklore about Christmas. It's just an encyclopedia, an online encyclopedia. So Yiddish folklore about Christmas exemplifies the complex understanding that East European Jews evolved of their neighbors' religiosity. Documentation of this lore, while limited, appears in a variety of linguistic and folkloristic sources dating from the early 20th century. Ignatz Bernstein's 1908 collection of Yiddish sayings offers a single proverb. Nittel is a biserlade, which means Christmas is a wicked burden. And it explains that this saying reflects a history of violence against Jews on Christmas Eve from the times of the Middle Ages. Other Yiddish terms for Christmas are clearly Jewish inventions. Goyimacht, which means Gentiles' night. Tolenacht and Yoiza, I don't know how to pronounce this, both meaning colloquially Jesus' night. Blindenacht, which means blind night. Or Finsternacht, which means dark night. And whatever, means fearful night. While these are largely expressive of fears associated with Christmas, others are more submersively playful, etc. Feel free to read the rest on your own. What we see from here is that the names that the Jews had come up with for December 25th throughout Jewish history really were names that identify the day clearly for the Jewish people, which was that the Jews were terrified on Christmas. This day always meant that bad things were going to happen to the Jews. And often throughout history, because of the fact that we were so clearly not celebrating this day at best, and at worst that we did not accept our Lord and Savior to be their Lord and Savior, as a result, we were treated terribly on this day. So historically, Jews hated this day. So you see that in the year 2023, we love our jokes about eating Chinese food on this holiday, and enjoying ourselves. But back in the day, this was a really terrible day for the Jewish people. Yeah, Jay?
I thought there was another famous
Rocksnack. There are plenty of other names that are given. Absolutely. Yeah, this is certainly not all-inclusive. And if you take a look at source number 5, it's only in Hebrew, but we'll read and translate, we'll see that throughout Jewish history, there were numerous customs that did develop for the Jewish people on December 25th, but they weren't cute, fun things. They were rather things that the Jewish people did in order to keep themselves aware of their surroundings so that if anyone came to attack them, they would be ready to fight back, God forbid. So you take a look at source number 5, it's the Nitei Gavriel. It's a sort of a contemporary compilation of a lot of different sources. He says as follows, Minhag Rov Kehilos Yisrael Shelo Lilmod Torah Beleil Chageim Shekorin Nitel. So it was the custom of many Jewish people on the eve of December 25th, that they would not go ahead and learn any Torah, which sounds great. A lot of people don't like learning Torah, but no, these are people who liked learning Torah, and they would not learn Torah on this night, because to learn Torah on Christmas Eve would mean that you would be immersed in something that could distract you, and then you may not be able to see what's going on around you. And not only is this something that's an earlier custom, but since it is a custom that has existed for who knows exactly how long, as a result, this is something that should be kept. Minhag Yisrael Torah, the customs of the Jewish people are like the Torah itself. So if this is what the Jewish people have done, we should always do so. I'm sure many of us observed this custom last night by not learning Torah because of the fact that it was Christmas Eve, yeah?
You're not supposed to learn Torah that night because you're supposed to be on guard, like hyper-vigilant.
Exactly.
Too distracted.
Yeah, correct.
This is like a trauma response.
Exactly right. And not only just was this a trauma response, but this was a real...
For sure, for a real reason.
Exactly. 100%.
But to the extent that we're doing it, we have to practice now, it's in memory of...
It would seem, yes.
Yeah.
I've
heard
this word most of my life, and I have confessed to not
know
what it means.
Yeah, what word? Nitel. So nitel means, it comes from the Latin word, I don't know the Latin word, but it comes from the Latin word to mean like birth. So it means like the birth of Jesus. That's why we call it. And so nitel nacht was the night of the birth.
Okay,
yeah. Yeah.
The last word on the curtain on that line there, is that shekurin?
It's shekurin that they call. Shekorin that they call Nitel.
No, not Shekor.
That's another night. And amazingly, there are many reasons why this was the custom. But if you take a look over here in this paragraph with the smaller text, so Tam HaPashut Muva B'Sefer Mitamim V'Shem Sefer L'Kutei HaPardei. So there is a very well known reason. And skip a line. Lefi Shabayamim Harishonim Hayu Sorerei HaYehudim Orvim Lahem Umakim Balayla Hahu Et Otam Shematzu B'Chutz Uberachov. If you saw a Jew on Christmas Eve, then you knew your job was to beat him up. This is what everyone did. This is just like the cool thing to do. So you're going around caroling, it's so nice, pleasant, whatever, right? But you then go ahead and beat up the Jew if you see them. And therefore, there were those who were very careful not to do anything other than stay on guard and certainly to stay in their house. Then he says further in the next paragraph, Yesh nahago l'schok shech. What is that? Right, chess. So back in the day, there was a custom that you're not going to just sit there and do nothing, right? So maybe you play chess, or you play checkers, or you do some sort of a game that will keep you, and some people get obsessed with the game, but hopefully that you're removed enough from the game that you can be looking around, checking your surroundings, making sure that you are very weary of anyone, God forbid, who might try to come in and hurt you. And so as a result, we see that ultimately this night was a terrible night for the Jewish people, certainly in Eastern Europe, and therefore Jews hated this day. And the notion of creating any sort of like lighthearted customs was obviously not going to be in the cards. And if you take a look at source number 6, we see that there's this really strong distinction between the German Jews, as we have said already, who arrived in America in the early years, and the Eastern European Jews who come later on. So take a look inside. When German Jews arrived in the United States in the middle of the 19th century, they devoted scant time to Hanukkah and more attention to Christmas. The German Jews perceived this as a way to identify as Americans, to assimilate culturally, and to advance in American society. Right? So as a general rule, if you were a Jew living in America in the mid-1800s or so, so you would go ahead and associate yourself with this holiday of Christmas to make it seem like you're trying to fit in. And certainly there was anti-Semitism back then in America, but perhaps it was a little bit different than the Eastern European anti-Semitism. And so you would go ahead and look like, oh, look, he's a Jew, but okay, he's still doing all the right things. He's doing everything that he should be doing. He's enjoying today as a day of rest or family, whatever, like we are, so we're not going to beat him up today. So in America, it was much more common to try to follow this as a holiday. In contrast to their German Jewish brethren, Eastern European Jews immigrating to America in the 1880s brought with them a history of commemorating Hanukkah at home. The more religious among them treated the holiday as an important part of the sacred calendar, right? So what you had were Jews that came later on, not that much later on according to this, but some Jews who came towards the end of the 1800s who said, wait a second, it's very nice that our Christian friends have the holiday of Christmas, but we have the holiday of Hanukkah, and it's falls around the same time of year, and it's equally as sacred in our mind as Christmas is to them, and so we should go ahead and highlight and demonstrate why this holiday is so important. So ultimately, though, what we see is two very distinct paths of how to go about viewing the holiday on December 25th. You have the Jews who try to make it a part of Judaism, and you have the Jews who do whatever they can to make it distinct from Judaism and say that this is not our holiday, and we go ahead and express that Hanukkah is the holiday to go ahead and really applaud and celebrate and show why it's so vital and important. And by the way, just to fast forward for a moment, the notion of having lavish displays of Hanukkah menorah lightings that you see with many of our friends in Chabad around the world, so where does that come from? That's very nice to say, Persuminisa. Where does it likely come from, though? Christmas, probably, because they had these beautiful tree lightings that they had in the public square, and then all of a sudden, I'm not trying to, God forbid, put Chabad down. It's beautiful what they do, but they wanted to show that there is an equal beautiful thing that we can do as Jews, and that is light the menorah. There is no source for lighting the menorah in the public square. That doesn't really exist in the times of the Gemara. The notion of making a bracha, by the way, in a public square for lighting a menorah is quite complex, and Lubavitcher Rebbe had to deal with that extensively when he suggested that this would be a part of what we do, because it's not found in the Gemara. It's not really found in the Poskim so much. We know that there is an idea of lighting the menorah in our home for sure. We know there is an idea of lighting the menorah in our shul, but to light it in the town square, not so famous, because again, we started doing this likely as a response to the fact that they were doing these lavish Christmas tree lighting, so we wanted to have our own form of lighting. Yes.
Except that the menorah is supposed to be publicly displayed in front of your window, or outside your house in front of the window, so it probably could, to some extent, I don't know.
Yeah, 100% correct.
But it's for your household.
Right, so we can absolutely... Right, so we can absolutely justify, well, let's say a few things. First of all, the Christians probably took the idea of a public Christmas tree lighting from the Jewish people of Persuminisa, that they wanted to publicize their miracle. We want to publicize our miracle. Maybe. But the notion of lighting a menorah publicly in the town square never existed, because even though it's supposed to be public and you're supposed to publicize it, it's also ner ish ubeto, which means you're supposed to light the menorah in your house. And so, yeah, a chatzer, a courtyard, absolutely. Yeah, a courtyard, but not never the town square. No. That wasn't something that we did. Yeah, you should light it. Oh, okay, that's nice. Yeah, maybe. But likely not what the rabbis in the times of the Gemara necessarily meant explicitly. Okay, so
I'm sorry. The idea of the public menorah lighting.
Yeah.
Doesn't that kind of follow Chabad's role of bringing in those that don't follow that Judaism really isn't a big cornerstone of their life?
Yeah, but they need to be more public about that. They need to be more public about that for Hanukkah, to specifically to push back on everyone who's seeing all their neighbors do all these big Christmas things. So I think it would go together with what the rabbis say, that they want to make sure Jews are connected to Judaism. Christmas is huge. They have to make Hanukkah bigger to get people more.
But I mean, from a marketing standpoint.
Kind of no, please.
From a marketing standpoint, I think it's a great opportunity to bring in
100%
those that aren't there.
And this is, again, I'm genuinely not trying to say anything bad about Chabad now. That's not at all. It's definitely not the intention. But it is something that we have to, as thinking. What? Oh, he said, yes, I am trying to. As thinking Jews, we have to try to understand where these things come from. And again, as a good millennial 2023 Jew, we know that these things have been going on since the beginning of time. But they haven't, right? And so we have to understand where they come from. And so that is the goal right now. Okay, so now that we understand that there are these that we have these two very distinct perspectives over here of how a Jew should go about celebrating or being a part of the holiday of December 25th, one being very pro and trying to bring it into the Jewish home, and one being very anti and saying, no, get away, we have Hanukkah, there's no reason to have this holiday of December 25th. So how do we get to modern day times in which Chinese food is so critical? And I sort of brought a little bit of a joke in source number 7, when Elena Kagan, a nice Jewish Supreme Court justice, was being questioned about her various policy. So you take a look inside this great conversation that she had. And so she thought that she was being asked about a policy issue. But Lindsey Graham was just saying, no, I just asked you where you were at on Christmas. And Kagan said, you know, like all Jews, I was probably at a Chinese restaurant. Right? And so this was in a congressional hearing that she was a part of. And so this is sort of like a beautiful and sweet moment that takes place. But let's try to understand this seriously now. Where does this connection come from to Chinese food? And so if I were to sort of survey the crowd, what would you say? Where does this idea of eating Chinese food on the holiday come from?
Well, for me, growing up, there was nothing else open. Only the Chinese restaurants were open. So, and then there was nothing else outside to do, but only the movies were available. So that's, I think,
correct.
Really, that's kind of how it came about.
Correct. So it is absolutely a sociological phenomenon and has nothing to do with any significant deeper meaning, most likely, between the Jewish people and the Chinese people. It's just the fact that it was open and we had nothing to do, and the Chinese people, they weren't doing it, so we went ahead and went to the Chinese restaurants. Yeah, Elliot?
At the Jewish Food Festival a couple years ago, we showed a film that took place in a Chinese restaurant on Christmas Day. But the theme of the film was all the Christmas music was written by Jewish composers.
Yeah, correct.
So every song played in this film was written by a Jewish composer.
Which, as we said before, most of the famous ones were written by Jews. And it's just fascinating that is the case. So absolutely, this is one of the major connections. But let's take a look at source number 8. We'll sort of skim through this paragraph a little bit and try to get a deeper sense of where this comes from. So there is a lot of literature written on this, believe it or not, about where the connection is really born. So take a look in source number 8. Successful Chinese restaurant owners on the Upper West Side of Manhattan and in Chinatown told us that the Jewish love of Chinese food was well known in the Chinese restaurant business. One friend who married into a large Jewish family told us his favorite joke. According to the Jewish calendar, the year is 5749. According to the Chinese calendar, it's 4687. That means for 1,062 years, the Jews went without Chinese food. The observations capture an important sociological truth. Eating Chinese is a part of Jewish culture in New York City. So how did this happen? How did Eastern European Jews in New York City come to adopt Chinese restaurant food? In their 2,000 years of migration, the Jews had previously adapted to very different culinary styles. But why in New York did Polish, Russian, Romanian, and Lithuanian Jews take to Chinese restaurant food over any other cuisine, including often their own? Jews certainly like Chinese food for the same reason given by all people over the world. It is available, delicious, and relatively inexpensive. I guess not anymore, but maybe at one point it was. Chinese restaurants are popular in Korea and Japan, where they are cheaper than the native restaurant food. Chinese immigrants run restaurants in Bombay, Sydney, London, Paris, and Havana. As 6-year-old Ethan says, the Chinese are good cookers. The Chinese have, in fact, developed a brilliant cuisine, an outstanding cultural invention, rich with regional variation. All right, so let's skip to Ah, let's keep reading. Its basic elements are over 4,000 years old, older even than the Jews. In short, quality, price, and proximity are some of the reasons why Chinese food became so important to New York Jews. But good-tasting, nearby, and economical food appeals to anyone who eats out. There was certainly other restaurant food in New York City for Jews to eat, including their own Eastern European foods. Why instead did they take so thoroughly to Chinese food? With an appreciation of the webs of significance and meaning that New York Jews have used to interpret Chinese food, their passion for this fare seems incomprehensible. Like other enduring cultural patterns, the Jewish attachment to Chinese food has been caused by many things. It has been overdetermined. However, surprisingly, it is also intelligible. So three themes predominate. First, Chinese food is unkosher and therefore non-Jewish. But because of the specific ways that Chinese food is prepared and served, immigrant Jews and their children found Chinese food to be more attractive and less threatening than other non-Jewish or treif food. Chinese food is what we term safe treif, right? So to understand, there were many Jews, as we know, who did not keep kosher, but still they found their connections and associations with the Chinese food because it was less treif, perhaps, than other food. Chinese restaurant food used some ingredients that were familiar to Eastern European Jews, and Chinese cuisine also does not mix milk and meat, right? So we don't mix pork and milk together, and so therefore we like the Chinese food. Indeed, it doesn't use dairy products at all. In addition, anti-Semitism and anti-Chinese racism and the low position of the Chinese in American society also, perhaps paradoxically, made Jews feel safe and comfortable in Chinese restaurants. So that's the first reason, that we felt safer and more comfortable in a Chinese environment because of the fact that it was less treif or they were abused as much as we were, so we liked each other.
In Israel, pork is called basar lavan, white meat.
What is it? Is that true? I don't know. Okay. Thank you for that. Second, Jews construe Chinese restaurant food as cosmopolitan. For Jews in New York, eating in Chinese restaurants signified that one was not a provincial or parochial Eastern European Jew, not a greenhorn or a hick. In New York City, immigrant Jews, and especially their children and grandchildren, regarded Chinese food as sophisticated and urbane. Right? So you see that when you have the fortune cookie at the end of the Chinese meal, you feel classy, right? That you're cracking open that the thing over there and you're getting your fortune, you feel like you're worth $1 million. And so the fact that the Chinese food is seen as classier, so that's why Jews also associated with it as they were trying to acculturate into Americanism. Third, by the second and third generation, Jews identified eating this kind of non-Jewish food, Chinese restaurant food, as something that modern American Jews, and especially New York Jews, did together. Eating Chinese became a New York Jewish custom, a part of daily life, and self-identity for millions of New York Jews. And today, many Jews show more enthusiasm for Chinese restaurant food than for Eastern European-style Jewish food. Women and men, now in their late 60s and 70s, stress that they did not want to eat delicatessen very often, because as one 67-year-old secretary put it, that we could eat at home. Frequently, they choose to eat at a Chinese restaurant. A number of third-generation Jews spontaneously told us the same thing. The first restaurant I ever went to was Chinese. We never found an Italian-American who said that. Right? And so ultimately, the strong connections between Jews and Chinese people, which, by the way, there are so many more connections that have been made between Chinese people and Jewish people throughout history. And there are those who I never actually read anything that was fully compelling about this, but there are those who want to say that perhaps towards the end of Abraham's life, when he marries a woman named Keturah and he has children and he sends them to the east. So there are those who want to say maybe that's the Chinese people that come from Abraham, and so that would be nice, and that's why, of course, we eat Chinese food on December 25th. But more seriously, there are so many connections between us and the Chinese people, just in terms of, again, how we've been treated and the fact that the religious sensitivity, while they are different, they are certainly the same in that we have our own different religious things than the American people do have. And so as a result, we sort of connected to them much more easily throughout time. And so when Jews were trying to fit in the 1900s, the 1800s even, they saw Chinese restaurants as a great option of something that they could do outside. Again, it was in America, while it was perhaps dangerous to be outside. While in Eastern Europe, it was perhaps dangerous to be outside. In America, no one was really outside. Everyone was at home eating their nice Christmas meals, and the Jews and the Chinese people were free to roam the streets, and no one would bother us. And so we went to go eat Chinese dinner on Christmas night. And this was so true that it's sort of just exploded at this point and taken on a life of its own. If we take a look in Source number 9, there's a great poem that was written called Erev Christmas. And it's just, we'll read the first paragraph. "'Twas the night before Christmas, and we being Jews, my girlfriend and me, we had nothing to do. The Gentiles were home, hanging stockings with care, secure in their knowledge Saint Nick would be there. But for us, once Hanukkah candles burned down, there was nothing but boredom all over town. The malls and the theaters were all closed up tight. There weren't any concerts to go to that night. A dance would have saved us some ballroom or swing, but we combed through the papers, there wasn't a thing. Outside the window sat 2 feet of snow. With the wind chill, they said it was 15 below. And while all I could do was sit there and brood, my gal saved the night and called out Chinese food." Right? So it sort of became a very clear, and feel free to read the rest of the poem because it is wonderful.
How long ago was this written?
It was, I think, in the late 1900s. So not so long.
How about this source?
What source?
The one we just read about New York City.
Oh, this was written in the last 50 years.
Okay.
I don't have an extra handout, but I... Look on together, and I'm happy to send it to you afterwards as well. Okay, so with all of this said, we now see that Jews wanted to find this meaning on, or not for, not meaning. Jews wanted to find something to do on December 25th, and Chinese food was sort of the obvious thing for them to do. What's interesting, though, and as sort of some of you alluded to already, is that past from the world, not connected to the world of the 1800 German Jews who wanted to maybe find significance in the day of December 25th, that it should be a holy day for them, there was this recognition that as time went on, not just Jews, but many Americans wanted to try to find a way to secularize Christmas in the same way that Halloween, by the way, has become secularized over time. So too, Christmas, because it is a federal holiday... both, all right? Because it is a federal holiday, and because it's something sort of seen that everyone should be partaking of it, so Jews wanted to find a connection to it also, as they wanted to be good American Jews. Because even if there was not necessarily something that of religious significance for us on the day, we did want to find for ourselves something to connect to our Christian brothers and sisters in this country that we are a part of. And so therefore, we sought the customs of Chinese food to be something that was very cute and connected to Jews. And that's also why there are so many Christmas songs that were written by Jews, because we wanted to find a connection. And more than that, we wanted to find a way to bring the day to be closer to us. If we take a look in source number 10, Irving Berlin, one of the greatest American composers and lyricists, can be credited with penning the most popular Christmas song of all time, White Christmas. Philip Roth, in his book Operation Shylock, offers kudos to Berlin for secularizing Christmas through his best-selling song. For Berlin, the power of Christmas was in projecting an idealistic world for which Americans longed. The idea of White Christmas came to Berlin when he was working in Hollywood during Christmas seasons and cannot be with his family to celebrate. For all Americans, whether Christian or Jew, the December seasons of Hanukkah and Christmas evoked strong feelings of idealism, of a world at peace in which families could celebrate the holiday spirit together. Right? So something like that, by the way, is important to realize that it is likely something that has been founded on the commercial industry that we have. All of the greeting card industry want to be able to sell their cars and to sell the holidays as a business. And you recognize that if you sell idealism, you sell world peace, you sell these like beautiful ideas and concepts, so people are going to buy into that. And so now all of a sudden we find ourselves looking back, recognizing that Hanukkah and December, that Hanukkah and Christmas both being in December, are they're all holidays of representing idealism, and they're all holidays of, you know, vanquishing the darkness. And this, you know, it's not to be mocked, but it is interesting to note that this idea of the theme of Hanukkah being that we have the light to knock out the darkness. So it's a beautiful idea, but you didn't necessarily hear rabbis using that in their sermon 400 years ago, right? It's something that has become more popularized because this is the theme of the world that we live in nowadays. And this is based a little bit on the commercial industry that we are surrounded by, and it's based on the fact that we all want to find our commonalities in a very beautiful way. And so you had these Jews who were trying to write Christmas songs, not because they were connected to the holiday of Christmas, not because they were connected to the birth of Jesus, but because they wanted to be a part of it. They wanted to feel... money, and but more idealistically, they wanted to feel a part of the kumbayaness that was being felt. And again, you take a look at source number 11. There were 11 iconic Christmas songs that were written by Jews, and again, we wanted to feel a part of this day, maybe in a different way, but we wanted to feel the connection. But I do want to conclude with source number 12, and source number 12 is sort of helpful for us to put this entire topic into perspective, because most people, again, are not always able to fully recognize the importance of this day for us in Jewish history. And again, nowadays we look at it as a lighthearted day where most people are off from work and we could have Chinese food, we could do this, we could do that. And I hear we do have a surprise at the end of the class for those of you who have made it this far. And we thank Bob for that, but we won't say what the surprise is just yet. But it is helpful to recognize how serious this day has been for the Jewish people in Jewish history. And so we all know that we had a fast this past Friday. It was Asara Bataves, and we fast on Asara Bataves because that was seen as the beginning of the end. That was when the city of Jerusalem was sieged and all these terrible things happened to the Jewish people. But there used to also be a fast for many. One second. There used to also be a fast for many on the 9th of Teves as well. And so what was that fast? Yeah, Caroline?
I was just going to say that this is still American Jews. The European Jews still have a very strong negative.
100%. 100%. Yep. So take a look inside in source number 12. So Isa min hayamim shekavu bahem tainis. Who tests b'teves? So there used to be a fast that was fasted on the 9th of Teves as well. Below noda izot sara irabo. But no one really always knew what terrible thing happened on the 9th of Teves that we fasted. Uperish tosvos chadashim al magilas tainis. Sheyom holada social oso ha'ish. So there are those that say that the reason why Jews for hundreds, if not thousands of years, fasted on the 9th of Teves was because that was the day that we knew through our traditions that Jesus was born. And so we understand that the founding of Christianity really basically happened on the day that he was born. And so if you understand that he was born on December 25th, he was also born on the 9th of Teves. And so the Jewish people, the way they celebrated or commemorated the day was by fasting. And the reason why is because, again, for thousands of years, we were treated terribly by most Christian people. And Jews had a horrible association with the day or anything that was connected to the day. And we know, of course, that Jesus was a Jew himself, but we know where his religion led to, and that is a very negative connotation for us. And so please don't, understand me wrong, and please recognize that I'm not saying that we should not be friends with our neighbors. Absolutely, we should be friends with our neighbors, and we should seek out to have positive relationships with all peoples and all religions and have good relationships there. But with that said, we have to recognize that we weren't all born in the year 2023, that there is a context to our religion, and our religion has mostly had negative relationships with the Christian religion as a whole. And as such, the 9th of Teves was seen as a fast day. And as a general rule, December 25th for most Jews throughout Jewish history was not a positive day. And so I think that there is a really important takeaway from all of this if we try to synthesize everything that we've said thus far. Basically, what it comes down to is that there are a lot of negative connotations to the day, and therefore many Jews who sort of wanted to separate themselves entirely from the day. Then there are a lot of, not negative, but let's say more positive connotations, and Jews who wanted to make December 25th be a more part of Jewish culture. And then there really is this third category of people who are just more or less oblivious to history and say, okay, it's kind of nice to feel connected, so let's write some songs and let's feel a sort of a brotherhood with all people together and celebrate December 25th in unity with our Christian brothers and sisters. What I believe is important for us to realize is that because of the context in Jewish history for this day and sort of the negative associations that are there, we should realize that today is not at all a celebration. I joked this morning, and because I've heard sort of sometimes serious jokes made about it in the past, about not saying Tachanun on December 25th, because, oh, what a lovely day it is, mostly because you don't work on December 25th. So it's really a great day to not a Tachanun, but that's totally inappropriate, right? It is at best a parv day, at worst a horrible day for Jewish history. And so to do any sort of a celebratory thing on this day is really inappropriate. However, with that said, recognizing that, thank God, for the most part, things have been okay for albeit a small amount of time in sort of the scheme of history, but over the last 50 to 75 years, things have been more or less peaceful on this day for us. To say that a person has their own Q traditions on any given day just because, there's nothing explicitly wrong with that. So what I tell people who, if people, and I'm never asked this question, but if people were to ask me the question, am I allowed to eat Chinese food or should I eat Chinese food on December 25th? So should you? Absolutely not. There is no, and I say it a bit as a joke, but also being very serious, to go ahead and say that this is a strong Jewish tradition to do, it's not only is it wrong, but it's really a little bit disgusting to say something like that, because again, historically, this has been a terrible day for the Jewish people. If it happens to be that you're off as a family on December 25th and you want to go ahead and cook Chinese food, then okay, you know, far be it for me to tell you how to spend your time in your kitchen, but not as a celebration, not even as a custom so much, just as okay, like this is what we do, you know, every now and again on this day. Yeah. Again,
and a movie.
Again, again, to do it does not bother me. Right, you shouldn't feel obligated, and more than that, I wouldn't say that this is a Christmas Jewish celebration, which some people jokingly would say, but I think because of the sensitivities of what this day was for Jewish people for so long, I would advise very much so against saying that. No, okay, we're all off today, and we know that this has been something that we've done for a number of years already, so it's nice to do, it's cute to do, it's a way to get people together, a way to get people into shul, it's always great, but to say as a Christmas Jewish celebration, that I would not go so far as to say, but with that, I hope that you have a little bit more of a sense now of sort of where all this comes from. And I thank everyone for joining. And I also thank Bob for preparing this beautiful breakfast. And for those of you who have made it thus far, we are now going to be treated to an egg roll. If you would like an egg roll at 10 a.m.
No, no, no.
And wish everyone...
No.